This week, Professor Chris McClellan joins me. We're going to talk about testosterone, mate. Boys or girls talk, this one.
This is for everybody, mate. This is a good conversation around men's health and some really important take-home messages, I think, around longevity and men's health, and also for the women. I think generally people think that testosterone is only a man's kind of domain, but we'll get through it today, but very much important for women's health as well.
Let's enjoy.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition. Today's podcast is brought to you by Triandrabol. Feel invigorated and perform at your best in and out of the gym with Triandrabol Test. Ideal for anyone looking to naturally increase testosterone levels to help you train harder, improve strength, reduce body fat, and boost libido. One of the most potent formulations on the market, loaded with high-quality therapeutic ingredients, Triandrabol is for both men and women wanting to improve their physique.
Welcome to Body Science HQ, the home of fit, happy, healthy. And today we're touching testosterone. I've got the big dog in himself, Professor Chris McClellan, who has done some studies around hormones. Are you a bit of an expert in this area?
Mate, I've done a bit, as you know. My background in hormones has more been around the measurement of those in athletic populations. Mm-hmm. So testosterone's been the big one. We've talked a lot in this podcast about cortisol, and that was another one. And we've looked at a few others along the way. But in terms of looking for really good opportunities to get some information out there on general health, I think testosterone is an important one. So we can dig into it a little bit and then talk about, you know, why it matters.
And where do you want to start, mate? What should we talk about first? Addressing this big topic.
Yeah, no, it's big. I think the main thing I'll talk about just a little bit of the background, because I think people gloss over it a little bit, and then there are some misconceptions around testosterone, and then we can dig into a little bit around why it matters from a men's health perspective, but also for women. So this is definitely training wise, some of the tips around training that can improve testosterone, and the big three are sleep, training, and nutrition. So we'll get to those in due course. But as by way of overview, I think, you know, the technical name, you know me, man, I like to get into some of that.
It's a technical. Hang up now.
So 17 beta hydroxy 4 androstenone.
Can you say
3-1.
That again? Can you say that
so
one
it's
again?
17 beta hydroxy 4 androstene 3-1 is the technical name for testosterone. Now, it's a steroid hormone, right? So people immediately think steroid. That's some sort of mythical substance that's going to turn me into the Incredible Hulk and some roid raging crazy person. The reality is that that's not the case. It's a really important hormone for men and women for normal reproductive function, but just general health. It comes from cholesterol fundamentally, like steroid hormones do, and it's produced stimulated by way of what's called the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis.
Where's that sit?
Well, it's from your hypothalamus to your pituitary to your gonads or to the ovaries in females. And there's a series of hormones that ultimately lead to testosterone production within Leydig cells. They're called Leydig cells within the testes and theca within the ovary. So the small amounts are also, the immediate comment is, well, women don't have testicles, therefore they don't have Leydig cells, which is absolutely true. And that's one of the, we do get it from ovaries and also within the adrenal cortex. So it's a little area called the zona reticularis, which is part of the adrenal cortex. And that's the area from which females will get their testosterone. And one of the reasons with exercise responses to testosterone, because we know that in men, testosterone can be boosted by how you train, right? And we'll talk about that. Basically, you've got to train heavy, really simply. We don't get the same, what we call acute responses. So an acute response would be, let's go and do a workout and measure testosterone straight after the workout. Mm-hmm. In men, we can see quite remarkable improvements based on what we do. Women don't get that. Don't quite get those immediate responses, but they can get some adaptation over time. So because they're going to rely much more on the ovaries and much more on the adrenal cortex for the improvements in testosterone from a systemic perspective. So it's what's called a primary androgenic anabolic hormone. And in the muscle, it will stimulate protein synthesis, which we call an anabolic effect. And it will inhibit protein degradation, which is anti-catabolic. So people are always worried about, you know, breaking down muscle and that sort of thing. So it works on both sides of that. The testosterone is anhydrous. So it has to have a carrier that gets it around the body. Most of the testosterone, about 60%, is bound to what's called sex hormone binding globulin, which is effectively just a carrier that helps it travel around the body. And about 38% it's bound to albumin, and then you have 2% that is freely circulating. And it's the 2%, which is the free testosterone. We talk about total testosterone and free testosterone. They both matter, but the free testosterone, which is only about 2% of all testosterone, is what's called bioactive. So that's the one that's going to bring us the results.
Yep.
It's mediated by a hormone called gonadotropin releasing hormone and luteinizing hormone. So fundamentally what happens is the hypothalamus has these little neurons in the brain, effectively, in the central nervous system, and they will secrete gonadotropin releasing hormone. The gonadotropin releasing hormone will stimulate the hypothalamus to release two gonadotropins, which are follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. The luteinizing hormone goes and stimulates the Leydig cells to produce testosterone, and the follicle stimulating hormone in men will stimulate what are called Sertoli cells within testicles, and that's spermatogenesis and the production of sperm. So there's sort of two pathways to this, and they're intertwined. Testosterone is then broken down a couple of pathways. Aromatase is an enzyme that converts testosterone to estradiol, and so in the bodybuilding community, we talk about anti-estrogen type of substance like Arimidex, and these anti-aromatase inhibitors are pretty popular. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to limit that process. That doesn't lend itself to a more effective testosterone dose, but it's more inclined to reduce the side effects like the gynecomastia and things like that. Yeah. The other pathway is via an enzyme called 5-alpha reductase that converts testosterone to a really active form of testosterone called dihydrotestosterone, DHT. DHT has been associated with more probably the nasty side effects, prostate cancer and things like that. But we can sort of get through that as we go in terms of, I suppose, the general health considerations. Within DHT gets a bad rap. There's actually two different forms of DHT. There's an alpha and a beta, and you need DHT. You can't not have it. And so there is, I think it's the alpha form, might be the, I can't remember off the top of my head, but is actually protective of prostate and things like that. So you've got to have it. And so it's an important consideration. And then in terms of, I suppose, the female situation, so what happens with females, it's the same process. It's the same hypothalamus, gonadotropin releasing hormone, anterior pituitary releases luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone, makes its way to the ovaries, and then we get a release of estrogen and progesterone.
Okay.
And that then stimulates the menstrual cycle and reproductive function and things like that. So they're both intertwined, and that's why it matters for men and women in terms of, you know, the importance of that whole axis, the HPG axis. And in terms of how that, and it's pretty involved, man, in terms of how it gets produced from cholesterol, it's pretty cool. I don't know if you want me to go through
Let's hit it.
So the biosynthesis is...
I'm going to spend a lot of time on Google later, just so everyone knows.
Well, it's called oxidative cleavage of one of the side chains of cholesterol, and that happens from a mitochondrial cytochrome enzyme called P450, which is an oxidase, and then that's the initial phase. So that then modifies the cholesterol molecule. There's then a second process, step two in the process, that is an enzyme. It's called a 17-alpha reductase or a 17-20 lysase, and that happens within the endoplasmic reticulum. Most of the action, the modification of the cholesterol happens within the mitochondria. It's like a lot of things we talk about. Everything comes back to the mitochondria. And so that's why, I guess, in terms of mitochondrial efficiency and mitochondrial biogenesis and all these really popular terms at the moment, mitochondria matter for function, and particularly with testosterone function as well. Once we've cleaved the cholesterol molecule within the mitochondria and the endoplasmic reticulum, so it's still inside the cell, there's another substance called a 3-beta hydroxyl group that then oxidizes what's called a 3-beta hydroxysteroid dehydrogenase, and that produces testosterone. So remember it was years ago we had prohormones, androstenedione and androstenedione.
Good old baseball days.
Yeah. So those substances are sort of downstream effects from the cholesterol, and they're this rate-limiting step. So this is that's the last step that we see before we get the testosterone itself. So the androstenediol is converted into the testosterone. That gets reduced via 5-alpha reductase to dihydrotestosterone, or aromatase converts it to estradiol. And then ultimately, you know, estrogen, fundamentally. And that's what we want to try and avoid as from a side effect, I suppose. And some people will, you know, experience higher levels of estrogen, men and women. And that's pretty much a sort of a biological genetic kind of condition, more so than anything. So the effects...
So it's a gift from your mum and dad, you say?
That's a gift from mum and dad. There's a few of those floating around, right? So the testosterone itself, a couple of effects, we call them androgenic and anabolic. So the anabolic, most people are familiar with, that's the muscle mass development, strength development, increased bone density, you know, that sort of thing. Whereas the androgenic effects are more a maturation of sex organs, secondary sex characteristics, things like that. And that's where, I suppose, the female audience go, oh yeah, no, I don't want any of those side effects of of maybe testosterone use or supplementation, because TRT or testosterone replacement therapy is a bona fide treatment strategy for men who are hypogonadal, hypo-low gonad function, testicle function. So there's two streams to this in terms of how they bring about adaptations. So what we're probably most interested in from our health and fitness perspective is the protein synthesis and reducing the amount of degradation of muscle mass. And so that's why trying to maintain healthy levels of normal testosterone is a really big deal. Testosterone binds, like all steroids, with a receptor called an androgen receptor, and it's a lock and key mechanism. We've talked about this before. The androgen receptor is really interesting, and I get into a conversation in the health and fitness industry, bodybuilding and sports like this, and if we're going to be really transparent with things, there are people who might take performance enhancing substances, and we're not endorsing anything, right? One of the things we see with people, there is a misconception that more is better, right? So the more testosterone I take, the bigger I'm going to get, you know, the more massive, and they see pictures of Arnold and, you know, massive bodybuilders on TV, and they go, oh, I'm just going to take a heap of drugs and I'm going to look like that. The cold, harsh reality of life is that's not how it works, mate.
Okay.
No, so your bodybuilders are born, not made, and they have...
They're born.
You're born to be a bodybuilder or not, and it has to do with effectively your androgen receptive receptor site affinity. It's how receptive are my receptors to a hormone.
So how do I, if I'm thinking about going down the...
Well, you're not going to know.
So you can't test for it?
No. The test for it is...
Can't test for the test?
No. You can't test for what the specific nucleotide arrangement is of your receptor, because there's a little bit of research around some of the polysynaptic morphisms or genetic traits around the receptor site that makes it more hyper or hyporesponsive to a product. So this is the thing with the very elite bodybuilders of the world. They don't need to take tons and tons of drugs. Because they're hyper-responsive.
Because they're born bodybuilder.
Yeah, and that's they get really good test, really good results from it. The test is called karyotyping. You're not going to be able to do that commercially. Mm-hmm. You can't get that done. The other one is we get with the anti-catabolic effect. Everyone talks about cortisol as being a catabolic substance, and everyone's pretty conscious of trying to keep cortisol levels low. One of the things with testosterone is that because it's anti-catabolic, it actually play a role in the inhibition or the reduction of cortisol signaling by blocking glucocorticoid receptors. So I don't know if you remember, our cortisol podcast, cortisol is a glucocorticoid that binds with these receptors. Testosterone plays a role in blocking that.
Okay.
So having healthy, normal levels of testosterone plays a big role from an anti-catabolic effect on the effects of cortisol on stress and, you know, all parts of life.
So how do I know if I've got a healthy level?
You have a blood test.
Yep.
Yeah. So any GP can do that. And you want to know what your total testosterone is, the free testosterone, which is the bioactive form.
That's your 2% you're talking about?
Yeah. But what's probably more important is the ratio of those hormones.
Okay.
So with hormones, it's not always about an absolute value. So for example, you might have someone who's got really high total testosterone. So normal testosterone in a male, say between 20 and 35, might be somewhere between 300 and 600 nanograms per deciliter.
Yep.
Ballpark, right? You'll have high and low of that. But you might have someone who's on the really high end of that, but they still have poor libido, you know, lethargy, you know, bad appetite. Well, sorry, not bad appetite, but poor appetite, things like that. A lot of the signs of low testosterone because they've got really, really low free testosterone. The other flip side of that is you could be on the lower side of normal, say 300, 350, but you've got really high free testosterone comparatively. You might be, you know, your percentage might be a little bit higher. So you're going to not have, although you're on the lower side of normal, you won't feel, you know, any of the negative effects that might be associated with low testosterone. So it's pretty complicated, and that's where we need, you know, finding the right medico to assist you work that out is a bit of a process. Not all GPs will be that keen to talk testosterone with you.
Yeah, okay.
And so that's where I genuinely think every male over 35 or even 40 should have their testosterone assessed from a men's health perspective.
So I've just turned 50.
Yeah, no, you're in trouble.
There's me, I know. So I'm probably not.
You're 50, but you look 35, right?
Yeah, thanks, mate. That's great. That's so what should I be going to the doctor and asking?
You want to check your test. You want to see what your total testosterone is, free testosterone, sex hormone, bone and globulin, progesterone, all those sorts of hormones, so that you can get a really good understanding of what your anabolic, catabolic profile is. And if it's low, you want to know, because there's a really high or a great deal of evidence around risk factors, comorbidities like insulin resistance, metabolic diseases, cardiovascular disease. The incident rates are unequivocal, mate. There's dead set an enormous amount of information that slam dunks not only causation but correlation with a lot of those types of conditions. So it's almost like a silent epidemic in that men don't know, because you're not going to go and test your testosterone. Most blokes wouldn't have a clue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they might think, well, I'm just tired, I'm stressed, I'm probably having a few too many beers on the weekend and my diet's not great, so I feel crappy. You're not supposed to feel crappy.
Yeah, right.
You know, and,
well, and when you say feeling crappy, what do you mean?
Oh, I mean low energy, you know, just low
unmotivated.
Libido. Yeah, unmotivated, those sorts of things.
Low libido is a big one with low
testosterone. Massive one. Yep. Low libido, yeah. Or erectile dysfunction.
Yep.
Obesity. Huge correlations between particularly central obesity and visceral fat, fat around the organs. So hypogonadism is with the low testosterone function from low testicular function. So it's a really big deal. So men, so you're 50, right? Yep. So from a general health perspective, we know that men over 35 will see a decline annually of about 1-3%.
1-3 annually.
1-3 annually, yeah. From about 35. So it starts pretty early. About 1.6% of that will be total testosterone, but more disconcerting is about 3% will be free. So 3% of your 2%
wow.
drops every year. So it doesn't take a whole lot of time for a clinical condition called andropause. So in women, we might call it menopause. In men, it's called andropause. And it's the same with females. Once a woman will also experience the same levels of decline, roughly. They've already got less. So men will have about 10 times the circulating testosterone as a female, right? That's by nature of yep. Leydig cells and all that sort of thing. So they're going to lose it at the same rate as a man over 35, right? And it's the same thing. They experience the same side effects, low libido, all this sort of stuff, right?
Okay.
So, but once a female has experienced menopause, it's a dramatic drop. It's like 60% within 5 years.
Wow.
Huge, huge drop. And so it's something that we want to be conscious of, and we can test it, which is really good. So the hypogonadism there's three different types. There's yep. a primary type, which is testicular dysfunction, which is a lack of the testes to respond to the luteinizing hormone and the follicle stimulating hormone. Okay. So it doesn't respond to those, what are called gonadotropins. The secondary form is that it's happening further up the food chain. So it's a pituitary or a hypothalamic problem. So there's insufficient production of luteinizing hormone or follicle stimulating hormone, or you can have a combo of both. So again, we need to know what that is. And that's a test, you know, it's a blood test, and we need to see what's going on there.
And what are the side effects of that? Like, how do you know if that's happening? Like, if I'm sitting at home going, gee, this just happened, I should go and see the doctor? Like,
oh, well, the big one's a change in sexual function, reduced libido in men, fewer testosterone is, you know, we talked about diurnal patterning and so forth.
Yep.
So the natural pattern of testosterone is that it's elevated first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. So men should wake up with an erection. That's a normal response. If you're not doing that, you should, I'm not asking you directly, but if that's not happening, you're supposed to wake up with one. So if you're not, you might want to check. Impotence, erectile dysfunction, and infertility. They're the big ones. And then the other signs of low testosterone are things like, you know, it can be quite subtle. It might be a lack of motivation. It might be, I'm starting to lose some muscle bulk. I'm starting to lose some strength. I'm still training, you know, in the gym the same, but I'm now 45, 46, 50, and my strength's dropping off. That's going to happen anyway, right? We do know that we get some changes in muscle mass and, you know, collagen structure. And there is an aging process that does occur. Certainly, it's not reasonable to think you're going to lift the same weights at 60 that you do at 20, because your joints will just give you a hard time probably. But these are the sorts of things that you want to be conscious of. Because if you're training, you shouldn't be going backwards.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Decreases in bone mineral density. If you're having that measured, you need to know. Depression, mm-hmm. massive. Mental health issues, fatigue, general lethargy, can't get out of my own way, not motivated, don't want to get off the couch. And so then dietary implications come in with that don't help. So they're the big ones. So if anyone's listening and they're men or women experiencing any of those sort of things, then, you know, I'm not saying that you've got, you know, low testosterone necessarily or
that's
testosterone
deficiency. That's not going to hurt to go see the doctor.
But you know what?
Test.
If you're in your 40s and your 50s and you're experiencing this, I think people just think that I feel crappy because I'm getting old.
Yeah.
You don't have to feel crappy.
No, exactly.
You know, it's not that's not part of the deal. Anyway, what we know, and just in from a health perspective with men's health, because I think men's health tends to fly under the radar a little bit. You know, men don't necessarily go to the doctor.
Yep.
Unless they've got a pretty decent problem, and even then. But I tell you what, if men have got sexual dysfunction, they're going to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
I would suggest, right? It can affect every other organ in their body, but if it affects your penis, you're probably going to go and get something done about it. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, so men develop things like coronary artery disease at a higher rate than women, right? We know that, I'm not talking testosterone here, I'm just saying generally, men will have premature coronary events and major events, I'm talking heart attacks here, at a greater rate than the female population, age matched, particularly over 40. So it's about double. So it's significant.
Double, wow. Yeah,
it's about twofold. What we know know is that total testosterone and free testosterone in men will decrease with age, right? We've already sort of covered that. At the same time that we're seeing this prevalence in increased myocardial issues. So it's not a huge leap of faith to say, well, hang on a minute, if I'm getting more risk factors associated with metabolic diseases, comorbidities. So comorbidities, I mean things that might lead to events like obesity might lead to increased risk of cardiovascular disease, things like that. And testosterone will have a role and an effect on all of those. And it's a really big deal. So when you have situations like obesity is massive, mate, for testosterone as well. Reduced insulin sensitivity, impaired glucose tolerance, diabetes is massive. Type 2 diabetes mellitus is a big, big issue. Elevated triglycerides, high density lipoproteins, all the nasties that we talk about all the time.
You're not painting a good picture there.
No. But it's not all that bleak, mate. You just got to get tested because you know what? There's a treatment for it.
Okay.
It's called therapy. It's called testosterone replacement therapy. And I think this is where I'm not talking about super physiological doses of testosterone that are going to make you a bodybuilder. I'm talking about an intervention that can bring you back to even low normal. And as we've already said, there's physiological effects, mental health issues, and the treatment's available. So I think it's just an awareness. Men just aren't aware that, A, it's a problem. Should I even test for it? And can I test for it? And then, well, can I do anything about it? Now, the reality is that not every GP on every medical center corner is going to want to prescribe this. And whatever the reasons for that is probably, you know, for another time. But there are doctors out there who will assist you with that. And my advice is shop around. Find a reputable medical practitioner who is prepared to provide the treatment that you need. Because it'll save you life, mate, is fundamentally what we know. So you're 50, right? So we know that about 20% of men over 60 will have testosterone deficiency, right? We know that 30% of men over 70 and 50% of men over 80 will have a problem. Overall, over men over 45 years of age, about 38% across the board will have testosterone deficiency. It's huge, mate. 1 in 3.
Yeah, that's huge.
And if you take it down further into men who are obese, it's 50%. Men who have established metabolic disease and metabolic syndrome, diabetes, 40%. They've all got it, right? And most of them don't even know it because they haven't even tested for it. So the issue is the comorbidities. It's the obesity, it's the diabetes, it's hypertension, hyperlipidemia, prostate problems, or prostate disease, even things like chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. Any of these sorts of things are associated with it. Obesity is a big one though, because obesity is directly associated with lower total testosterone and lower free testosterone.
Why is that?
Well, it's interesting actually, because there's a couple of theories around how that works. One is this it's called the hypogonadal obesity cycle. So some research back in 1999, it's Cohen's theory. It's a good paper, actually. I'll put it up
put the link at the bottom.
So testosterone gets converted to estradiol. Remember we talked about via aromatase? So aromatase is the highest level. That happens in fat tissue. Conversion happens in the fat, right? So the more fat you've got, the higher adipocyte expression you've got, the more aromatase you've got, the more of that enzyme you've got. So the more circulating aromatase you've got to convert testosterone to estradiol. So there's more of it, really fundamentally. So that will reduce your circulating testosterone level because more of it's going to get converted to estradiol. So that promotes a situation where you have a drop in total and free testosterone because you've got more fat cells. Gradually, overall, your profile of testosterone will reduce. The way by which the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis works is that negative feedback loop, right? So by producing testosterone, it switches itself back off, and that's the process. So when you have when that's our negative feedback loop, the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, because of the aromatization that's occurring, it doesn't have that off switch. So you'll get more and more estradiol called E2 that gets produced. So you get more aromatase activity, increased fat cells off the back of that in obese men, more suppression of gonadotropin releasing hormone or the whole luteinizing hormone, less stimulant. And so you get progressive hypogonadism. So being fat, or having obesity, lends itself to more obesity and less testosterone.
Yeah, it's a tough gig.
So it's a tough gig. And then the other one to that's a bit more technical, but it has to do with what's called adipocytokines. So cytokines are inflammatory mediators. So like interleukins and tumor necrosis factor, alpha and things like that. But basically the way that one works is when you link estradiol with adipocytokines, like what's called tumor necrosis factor alpha, TNF-alpha, and some of the listeners will know exactly what I'm talking about here.
I'm glad they do.
Yeah, no, they will. Yeah. And interleukins. So interleukin-6, for anyone listening, will know what I'm talking about. Both of those adipocytokines, they're inflammatory mediators, right? They inhibit the whole hypothalamic production of gonadotropin-releasing hormone. Those, just alone, by having a greater presence of inflammatory mediators because of estradiol, you're going to switch the gonadotropin tropin releasing hormone off. It's a lot of words. So that reduces the release of luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. You know, it's pretty technical podcast, but some people are interested.
Good. It is interesting.
But yeah, what happens then is leptin becomes a player, right? Mm-hmm. We know leptin comes from fat cells. Yeah. Yep. So it's all, you know how I always say nothing happens in isolation with
absolutely,
fat.
Yep.
So leptin is from fat cells, right? Leptin also increases or induces luteinizing hormone release under normal conditions, right? And it does that because it stimulates the hypothalamic gonadotropin releasing hormone neurons in the hypothalamus.
Mm-hmm.
There's another mouthful for you. What happens is that the gonadotropin releasing hormone neurons in the hypothalamus exhibit, they have little receptors, or not many receptors for leptin, okay? We have these little things called kisspeptins, K-I-S-S peptins. Kisspeptins are peptides that are secreted by the hypothalamus again, and they're a link. They're like a functional link between leptin and the release of, yeah, I know, I've lost you, gonadotropin regulation. They play a role in gonadotropin releasing hormone secretion, yep, and luteinizing hormone. I know, I lost. For anyone I lost, I'm sorry, but some people might find it pretty interesting. Anyway,
I think a lot of people will, mate. Can we put something up there?
I'll put a paper up. Kisspeptins are important regulators. Anyway, estrogen receptors.
I was actually laughing because I didn't think you were breathing and I thought you were going to pass out when you were saying that.
It's a lot there. Estrogen receptors sit on kisspeptin neurons. Yep. It's complicated, man. They will play a role ultimately in a reduction in the stimulation of Leydig cells, which are the endpoint for testosterone production. So it's a pretty big deal. So inflammation's a big deal, right? Total testosterone, free testosterone, inverse relationship between insulin levels, glucose levels, triglycerides. You become this systemically inflamed, right? It's not where you want to be.
I've got a question. Can yes. I throw one at you?
Sure.
So say I'm a 40 plus male.
Drink of Red Bull. A good friends.
I'm a 40 plus male, 50 year old male. I've just lost 15, 20 kilos on a little fitness and diet.
You just lost what?
I'm just lost 10, 15 kilos, whatever. You know, I've had a crack and, you know, might have joined F45, started moving, whatever it is that got me going, eating properly. There's such a word to use. Better habits. So am I suddenly going to have more testosterone because I've lost some weight?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, high likelihood, yeah. So mm-hmm. you'll reduce your comorbidities. So if you reduce the number of fat cells, you'll reduce all of those things we were just talking about in terms of the aromatase levels. So your likelihood of having a better profile is vastly improved. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that increases your testosterone, I can't sort of say exactly, but it reduces your risk factors for having.
So it is one of the strategies.
Big time. Yeah. Losing weight's huge, man. Mm-hmm. If you can lose weight and get your lifestyle going on, sleep, I said, is massive, but you can reduce anything. It'll reduce insulin resistance because we know that there's direct correlations or inverse correlations between testosterone and insulin resistance. Now, in that situation, we know that about 70% of the body's insulin sensitivity happens within muscle. So if you can maintain good levels of muscle mass, that's why muscle is important, man, to keep muscle. This is why I'm a massive fan of resistance training rather than, you know, lots and lots of endurance training in as you age, because you're always
You just want to define what you mean by resistance and endurance.
So endurance training, I mean
running,
marathon running, long cycling, anything that is, you know, really aerobic metabolism for a long period of time. Resistance training, I'm talking about anaerobic exercise and also exercise that loads joints, bones, and muscle to maintain the integrity of those. But anyway, there's good. Anyway, I can go through it really quickly. Things like blood pressure, things like lipid profile, even vascular stiffness in terms of cardiovascular disease risk factors. All of these things have direct correlation rates with testosterone levels. So it's a really important one. Sarcopenia, so the loss of muscle mass as we age, direct correlations with lower testosterone. So you lose muscle. You lose muscle in older populations, they fall over. Mm-hmm. They fall over, they fracture their hip, they have a hip replacement. It's a really vicious cycle. Yeah. So what do you do about it, I suppose? It's probably, you know.
Can we start with diet?
Diet's cool, right? So
you were saying earlier, like, stay away from the licorice.
Yeah, man.
Why is that?
So licorice.
I love licorice. I'm 50 though. I may not ever eat it again.
So licorice. What's the technical name of licorice? It's a root, right? It's a plant. You remember? Do you know what it's called?
Nah.
I'm trying to think. It's got a crazy name. It's like glycyrrhiza or something. It's a plant. It's the root of a plant.
Don't they say if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it?
I know, right?
Well, that's probably true here.
That'd be a lot of things. Anyway, there's some literature that tells us that licorice will absolutely drop your testosterone.
Someone actually did a licorice testosterone study.
It's a herb, and I'm not a herbalist. Yeah. Don't claim to be, but definitely there's a ton of it actually. So if you get onto PubMed and you Google licorice and low testosterone. There's probably 50 studies on it.
Stop it.
True story. The one I like is cocoa powder, you know, raw cocoa. So one of the things with testosterone, right, is...
You're saying you should drink
yeah.
more cocoa.
Yeah. It's got, it's full of theobromine. Theobromine is great because it activates dopamine receptors. What happens if you have high dopamine receptors? You get rid of your sugar cravings. So...
So hit the dark chocolate and the...
Rip in.
Are you sure about that?
I'm sure. I'm sure about it. So the only thing, if you have dark chocolate, if you have cocoa at night in water, don't drink it with milk.
Just hot water cocoa.
Yeah, a couple of little teaspoons. So there'll be about 10 grams.
That would
grams.
Taste like shit.
Hey, eat for function, not taste, man.
Okay, yep.
Isn't that...
We're test boosting today. Let's test boost, yep.
We're boosting tests.
Yeah, exactly, yep.
So you have about 10 grams of carbs in
Might
there.
Might be why chocolate protein outsells all other flavours, like 3-1.
It's probably it. Not licorice. But the other big ones are the usual suspects. Zinc, lots of research around zinc. Magnesium, vitamin D, creatine monohydrate, really good from a testosterone perspective. The other ones that are probably some evidence, but not as much evidence around things like D-aspartic acid, DHEA, which isn't available over the counter anyway.
Yeah, it's a no-no here.
Yeah, it's a no-no in most of the places in the world, really. Yep.
And can't spot over the counter in states.
No, you can get over the counter. And then I guess for clinical presentations, if you're over 40, most, well, general practitioners can prescribe testosterone therapy. And that might only be sort of 200 milligrams every, like a testosterone enanthate or something like that, a long-acting testosterone ester every 2 weeks. So it's not a huge, and that's not going to turn you into anything, trust me. They're probably the big ones. The other ones that may not make your listeners super happy would be the conversation around vegan diets and plant-based diets and testosterone.
Because, you mean all those phytochemicals aren't helping me?
Well, there are some that are really good for you,
yep.
for sure. But it's, you know, the thing with a lot of the phyto or xenoestrogens and things like that, xenobiotics and things like that, we're all conscious of plastics and all that sort of stuff, right? The soy situation is interesting because soy's in everything, right? Mm-hmm. The thing, my read on soy, and correct me if, the thing with soy is the isoflavoids in soy. So there's two main ones, right? You probably know more about this than I do. There's genistein and then there's diadaxine or something like that. They're two isoflavones. It's not them as much as how the microbiota in your gut metabolize those. And that's a really individual thing around gut absorption and that sort of thing. Because I'm not saying that that's going to give you a low test, but there are certain bacteria in the gut, and don't ask me to name them, but they convert those isoflavoids to a thing called EQUOL, which is an EQUOL. And now that actually breaks the carbon bonds within like the testosterones and the estrogen, that sort of thing. It actually leads to them the gut reabsorbing them a lot more, which is not what you want. So there's a few things with that. In terms of the plant-based diet, it's well reported that lower total testosterone and lower free testosterone with plant-based diets.
And is that why the carnivore revolution that's happening at the moment is talking
about? I don't
think
that's why. I don't think that's what started it. Because I think that's just people don't want to eat vegetables.
Yeah, is that what you think that is?
That's what you are. You just don't want to eat vegetables.
I don't mind a carnivore diet myself.
Yeah. I saw the meat patty and eggs you had for lunch and you're heavily into the carnivore. I think that that's probably more around a leucine intake as at a guess, you know, around branch chain availability.
Because your plant diet's typically
going to be fairly low in that, typically. Because the leucine's associated with mTOR, protein synthesis, you know, there's a few things there. So maintaining muscle mass.
We may be bringing out a vegan-friendly BCAA formula in the next couple of weeks, guys.
I think that'd be a really good product for that population, for sure.
But for all populations, Mac, not just vegans.
No, for everyone, Greg. Absolutely.
Quality product.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Sugar intake's another one.
So in what way?
Well, sugar stimulates insulin, right?
Yep.
So this is the whole, if it fits your macros, falls on its proverbial. It's not a caloric thing. You know, but then we get into a conversation around ghrelin and leptin. We've already talked about leptin. It matters, right? Glucagon, all these sorts of things. So you think about it, right? If there's a lot of people who have their macros on point, they're not losing any weight. Similarly, there's people who are meeting their macros and getting fat as fools.
Yeah.
Right? You can't live on, you know, chocolate frogs and ice cream. I don't care what the if it fits your macros people. I know that's an oversimplification of it, but it's not that simple. So high sugar, high insulin, high aromatase converts to estrogen. Simple as that. So you got to drop your simple carbs. You got to keep your complex carbs so you can't just hit your macros. You're going to be miles off.
Okay.
That would be my comment. The other thing, I think, nutrition-wise, I think that's probably where you need to be. The other big one, sleep. You got to track. I think most people should keep an eye on their sleep, whether they use a Fitbit or, you know, some other device. We do know that if you're getting less than 5 hours of sleep a night, you'll have low testosterone. That's pretty well established.
Any particular type of sleep or just sleep?
REM. Good sleep. REM sleep. We know that REM sleep increases those nocturnal levels of testosterone. So it'll help you wake up in a suitable manner. There's some research around the rejuvenation of the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis. They're telling us about 8 hours sleep is where you need to be. I'm not getting that. And I don't know about you, but 8 hours is a ton of sleep, I would have thought. And the other big one is training. and how you train, because this is the piece that everyone can adapt.
So you said morning training before? You afternoon train, don't you?
I am.
Yeah.
Getting later and later, actually. I prefer to evening train, but it's too busy, man. What's important? Important things are muscle mass and intensity and volume. They're the really big ones, and they lend themselves into the exercise selection and the rest periods and stuff like that. Take-home message, large, multi-joint, multi-muscle movements. Bicep curls and calf raises will not elevate your testosterone. I'm very sorry. Squats, deadlifts, those kind of compound lifts, that's where you need to be. In terms of, there is definitely a volume and intensity threshold for testosterone response. Said at the very start of this thing that men can get quite pronounced increases in testosterone acutely, I mean immediately after the workout. Women don't get that so much, but they can have what's called a spillover effect on their adrenals. So I mentioned at the very start, women get some of their testosterone from their ovaries and the rest comes from their adrenals. Cortisol, you get an exercise, gets an increased adrenal response, will get an increase in a spillover effect and have an increase in testosterone. So women can benefit from that as well. High intensity, low volume is not as effective as more of a moderate intensity, high volume. So what I'm saying is, girls, I hate to tell you this, but when you're doing your 1RM squats and putting them on Facebook or social media, Instagram, that is a complete waste of time on so many levels. It's not even funny. One, you're not going to get any muscle mass development from it. That's a neurophysiological adaptation to strength training. So that's rate coding, twitch summation, excitation, contraction, coupling off the back of that. If you want to grow, you need cross-sectional area adaptation. You need muscle hypertrophy. Every paper ever written on muscle mass development will tell you that you need to go above 6-8 RM, right? So don't go. And then from a hormone response, from a testosterone response, and I can put some studies up, but 20 sets of 1 RM will not change your testosterone one bit. 10 sets of 10, the old German volume stuff,
yep.
It's been around forever. Massive increases, 15 millimole increases in lactate. The really cool thing that we know about lactate and lactic acid will directly stimulate Leydig cells in men,
okay,
and stimulate your test. So you want workouts that increase lactate and lactic acid, right? So what does that look like? That looks like my really high intensity anaerobic work, my HIIT sessions, my circuits, all that sort of stuff. Or bodybuilding with like a 60-second rest, high volume. So 1RMs is a waste of time. I say this to people, anyway. I'm talking to the converted. But anyway, and it's independent of strength levels. It doesn't matter how strong you are.
Okay.
Right? So as long as it's your level,
yep,
that's all that matters. You don't have to lift a ton. And it's the same. So with women, we do get variable results. They don't have Leydig cells, obviously. They do have an adrenal spillover. I've mentioned that. We've got to think about a thing called adrenocorticotropin hormone. Remember that from the HPA axis? You're nodding. But ACTH stimulates cortisol. It also causes an increase in testosterone from the adrenal cortex. ACTH increases with heavy resistance training. So that's going to lead to a greater adrenal testosterone response in women. So women can still get the results. So heavy weights or moderately heavy, not 1-3 RMs with really long rest periods, not in your favor. If you want to get strong, that's how you train. If you're a strength athlete and you need to do 1 RMs, then you should do them for sure. But otherwise, you don't need them. So that's probably a take homes. I mean, that's a whole lot of talk from Dr. Mac. You know, there's a whole lot of flow on effects there with, you know, how we can, I suppose, boost it. The three take-home messages are sleep. If we can get our sleep right, get our nutrition right, and train. And they're the three big ones. And if you can get that sorted, you're on the money.
Any advice on how many times a week we need to be training for test boosting? Like,
you can do it every day.
Every day?
So within, it's only acute, right? So it's only going to be within a couple of hours. So it only lasts a couple of hours. So you're not going to get, like, let's say you get
So why would we care about that?
Well, from a recovery perspective and a protein synthesis perspective.
Yep, okay.
And an anti-catabolic effect. So you want protein synthesis. So anything that leads to protein synthesis is a good thing for us.
Good thing, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why you want it.
Nice.
That's where we're at.
Mate, I know it's not your lane, but a lot of people are taking test boosters. What do you think?
Man, I'm a fan, right?
Yeah.
You know,
Not a herbalist.
All the usual thing. Tribulus, man, I take it every day. I think the products like Triandrabol, Body Science, and, you know, I've been taking it for 20 years. I actually think that it's, and, you know, we can punch holes in the research all we like. And one of the things you'll find with research is that there'll be some supportive evidence and others that don't show that.
Yep.
One of the keys, and I say this all the time with research, you've got to learn how to read a paper because it's the methodology that matters.
Yep.
It's how they do the study. So in terms of how do I know, why do I take it? Because, you know, I measure my own testosterone, right? Mm-hmm. I do it with saliva. The way that the modern world in terms of, and I'm not talking about diagnosing here, I'm talking about monitoring. I've been working with salivary testosterone, cortisol, alpha amylase, immunoglobulin A since 2008.
Yep.
Right. So this is not new tech. And this is what I do with people I help prep for comps. And I've been doing it with elite athletes for over a decade. right? That's my PhD. We can look at free testosterone levels in saliva on the spot. It takes me 12 minutes, right? So I can do a workout or I can take a product and I test, like let's say I'm going to test a product, a test booster, and I want to know if it's going to work for me. Take the product, allow for sufficient time for half-life and digestion, and do a saliva test.
Yeah, okay.
And if I see an increase in free testosterone, I know it works for me. Yeah. That's why I take it. And that's exactly what I do. And so that's what I do with clients around, you know, training. So training session adaptation. If I write a training program for someone and we're trying to grow, so I want muscle mass or we're trying to get lean, whatever it might be, I'll do that session with that client and then I'll test their testosterone and their cortisol. And alpha amylase is a sympathetic nervous system surrogate that basically takes the whole hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis out of the equation. So as far as I know, I'm the only guy in Australia doing it. I don't know anyone else. Actually, I know I'm the only one doing it because I invented the testing and validated in research. So, and the other one to look at is an immunoglobulin IgA, which is an acute phase reactant for the immune system. So what we can, it's probably another podcast, but I can predict when you're going to get sick.
Wow.
Yeah. So upper respiratory tract infections and things like that. So I look at a shift in the ratio of IgA to amylase. So alpha amylase is non-dependent of the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. So it's more of a marker of physiological stress than psychological stress,
okay,
which is why I talk about cortisol being a blunt hormone, because it's dependent on everything, right? What I just ate for lunch will spike my cortisol, right? So whereas amylase doesn't, it's solid. But if I do a really heavy weight session, I'll see a shift in it. And so that's how I differentiate those type of markers. And that's where you should be at, you know. And, you know, in the world, it's my little rant, but if people pay a lot of money for personal training and comp prep and that sort of stuff. Careful what you know, make sure you're getting value, would be my comment. Yeah.
So if someone wants to get in contact with you, it's at
the Dr. Mac, man. One of the best social media Instagram profiles you'll find.
You don't have a website though, do you?
It's quality, not quantity, man. No, there's no websites.
Yeah. You love a good DM?
Yeah. People contact you? Yeah. I had to think again what them? A DM was. But yeah. Love a DM. Yeah.
Sweet.
All right, man.
Perfect. Well, Mom, that's testosterone 101. I'd like to say 1001 because I'm going straight to Google, look some words up right now. Mate, that was unreal. I enjoyed it. I shouldn't take the piss out of it. That was really good.
Well, we do. Look, we kind of got to do the deep dive every now and then, right? And there's an audience
for
it.
And, mate, they love it. You know, people go, I didn't get that. But a lot of people go, I love it. So,
Well, hopefully it helps.
Thanks.
Get your cocoa powder in.
Yeah, I'm going home for hot chocolate tonight. Not chocolate, hey. No, that's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. I was having a crack. Anyway, everyone enjoy. That's it from Body Science HQ. See you later.
See ya.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.